obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Hi, my name is Sharon C., and I'm an alcoholic. I wasn't quite sure who I was or where I was, but that's okay, Michelle. You think I'm from Culver City? I'll be from Culver City. I love you, Michelle. Thank you for the invite. No, it's okay. I sponsored you a long time. I get you. It's okay. We have wonderful history, me and Michelle, definitely. I watched her little baby be born and all of that. So anyway, thank you, Michelle. Thank you, committee. Thank you for all the love and amenities. And I think I got a new friend here in David. We were laughing about some things. And, you know, it's just I want to welcome Robert and Jess and Julie and let you know that, you know, we're happy you're here. You're probably not, but that's okay. I certainly wasn't. I didn't know where I was. I thought I was just at another church at another place with one more start, and somebody was trying to help me, and the speaker or this person, who I didn't know who he was, behind the podium said he always waited for the spaceship to land and say, "You can come home now, Bill." And I identified, because I was the little girl in Iowa, which was my first resentment. Sitting in the soybean field, sitting in the cornfield until the corn got too high and I couldn't see the sky anymore, looking for the mothership, because I knew it was coming back to get me because it had left me in the wrong state. So that was early on, and I needed a drink way back then, but I come from a normal family, and that's kind of odd. And we're still waiting for somebody to fall out of the closet alcoholic, but no luck yet. But when I come home now, I bring the fun. It's still the fun. It's still great people. It's still a lot of people, but nobody has to worry about their car keys. Nobody has to worry about their pocketbook. Nobody has to worry about somebody passing out in the bathroom. Nobody has to worry about the type of people that I ran with and brought home. And, you know, I identified with a lot of the speakers this weekend in many different ways, and I got to spend some time getting to know some new people, and I always love that in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I am, by nature, when I drink, I don't need you. I'm a loner. I got my backpack on with my book Be Here Now in it by Baba Ram Dass. I have everything I need in there in case I have to make a quick exit, which I had to do many times. And so my drinking started when I was young. I come from, my dad is mostly Czech, and they had a lot of Czech weddings and Czech funerals and events. We're always drinking. Accordion music, dancing, polka. You know, and I have some of my very first memories of with my family were, you know, watching them get a little bit lit and having a good time, and they partied and they had a great time. But everybody went to work the next day. Everybody showed up and took care of their responsibilities. And I don't really remember sipping a lot of drinks, but I know I did. My mother never hardly drank anything, so I sipped her drinks out of her straw. They were screwdrivers. I have three other siblings, not alcoholic. And I don't know if they did that. We've never really discussed it. But I do know that I, about 12 years old, I went out with the Clark boys one night in the summer. And you know, I'm still in my trainer bra. And, you know, I'm like, you know, waiting, you know, for spring to bloom or something. And I'm far behind everybody else in many different ways. But the Clark boys let me hang. And so I'm hanging with them, and Mark had a 57 Chevy, and we went out to the country, and there's a place called the Seven Sisters, and there were seven hills on this blacktop road, and you could catch air, and that's where the Lovar boys and I rolled their GTO, and we landed wheels down. It was like, I couldn't wait to do it again. It was like, they were a little pissed because they had a few dents, but I was out there for the first time, and they started just about, I don't know, four or five cars, and they turned all the radio stations to the same radio rock and roll channel, and the football players were there, and the cheerleaders were there, and popular girls, and just, you know, some of the trouble boys, and there I was with the Clark boy sitting on the hood of his Chevy waiting for something, and all of a sudden there was a crack of the Schlitz beer and, you know, the bottle top of that, you know, when that paper rips, when you unscrew the Canadian Club, you know, and oof, thank you, Canada. They started passing that around, and it was easy. I mean, I took a lot when it went by me, and pretty soon I looked down, and my little blooms had bloomed a little bit, and I was sitting next to Jeanette Andrews. There she was with her mohair sweater tucked into her shorts. It's like Iowa summer. What are you wearing a mohair sweater for? And I looked over at her, and she's like, I don't know, 36D is why she was wearing a mohair sweater. Showing off her wares, and she had her legs crossed, and she had little white Keds on that were perfectly white, and she had her socks rolled down, like in a little roll down to her Keds over her little cute ankles. A couple more pulls off that bottle, it was, get off, Jeanette, here I come. And I guess I told jokes, I won the chug-a-lug contest. I had a blackout, I guess I drove a car. I woke up in my bed, and I felt kind of rotten, but I couldn't wait to do it again because something had just filled every little crevice in me and allowed me to feel omnipotent, allowed me to feel that search that I had been on since I could remember being born, the search for truth and reason, it was there. And I got obsessed with Gandhi when I was about that age, and my mother wouldn't let me not eat pork or fast, so I just started drinking because I, you know, why go to India? Have a drink, you know? That was my nirvana. That was my spiritual awakening. That was my spiritual experience. And my family, they're overachievers, and I had to do it too, and I did it in spades, but boy, I was finding a lot of fun on the weekends. I was finding a lot of fun during the week. I started cutting school, and by the time I graduated high school, I had a scholarship to go to Colorado, and I ended up 20 miles from home at this university because I had a boyfriend. So I'm making decisions already based on self that aren't really going to be good for my long life of sharing any of my God gifts with you, which were music and painting. And along my road of alcoholism, a couple of things happened. I got my heart broken by my fiancé. I caught him thanking his tutor one night outside of the sorority. I'm driving by and I'm going, oh, that's my fiancé thanking his tutor with his lips. And so I got very drunk and I waited for him to go to sleep and let myself in and I started punching him. He was sleeping. So... I've never got a hand for that before. You're my, here you go. I'm with you. You're my type of drinker. So, justice, revenge, yes. It was the 60s too, so it wasn't just say no, it was just say thanks. A lot going on. There's a lot of places to be mad and pissed off and a lot of... potential rallies that turned into craziness and tear gas and things like that. And this is the little girl that could have been an artist or a musician, and somewhere along the line, alcohol asked for pieces of you. And it's not so clear usually. I mean, the breaking my heart was very clear. My mother said, aren't you going to cry? And I said, no. And I stuffed those feelings down as far as I could in my body. And I drank at those feelings. And it became... absolutely natural for me to drink at any feeling I didn't want to feel, which was most feelings, because I'm just too sensitive. I was a little girl. My mother said we used to drive down the block from Grandpa and Grandma's house, and you'd make us stop the car so you could get out and run back and give Grandpa and Grandma one more hug because they might die before I see them again. I mean, this kind of little girl that was had those thoughts and too sensitive, but I would cover it up with my smile or my tap dance or my accordion playing or my sax or my piano or my paintings or, you know, the drama I'm in. Whatever is happening, I would cover it all up. But alcohol asked for pieces of me as I went down the path of alcoholism, and I gave it willingly. I mean, who needs, bartender would have said, I was living in New York City, maybe at the West End Bar getting my bumps on my head read by the phrenologist every Friday afternoon in the West End Bar. And he had like this white gauzy stuff on so I could always spot him in the dark bar. And I was working in an ad agency, never sleeping. It was the summer of drink, 2-hour martini lunches at the ad agency every day with Harriet Krasnowitz, who I still remember her name. I don't remember people I went to high school with, but 2-hour martini lunch lady, remember her name. And, you know, then I would dip my finger into a bag of, somebody gave me a bag of orange sunshine for my birthday, and that was my vitamin C every single day. I was a little out there, and riding subways and walking Central Park at night, and I would go to my phrenologist at the West End Bar Friday afternoon after work before the party started, and he would read the bumps on my head and tell me about my life. Oh, okay. So maybe that, somewhere in there, the bartender would have said, you know, it's time you pay with your artistic talent. You're not going to paint another picture. Just slide it over to me and I'll give you your drink. It's like, take it, give me my drink. I need king alcohol in my life. And like I said, it wasn't so clear that that was where it all happened, but somewhere along the line I stopped caring about painting. Somewhere along the line I handed my creative bone to alcohol so it would work. Take it, King Alcohol, just be in my life. You're my buddy, you're my friend, you're the only thing I need. And I wasn't making those decisions just, you know, sitting down doing a little writing. It was just as I was living my life, because alcohol became much more powerful, much more important. It just was my priority. I tried to go back to college, couldn't paint. Ended up in Colorado trying to be a cowgirl. That was my new thing. I had a couple years of college in there, off and on. I had a suicide attempt. I had the family priest was brought down to me to help me out. He and I got smashed on Whiskey Sours, I remember. I was not a good influence. We ended up at a B-in or a love-in in the student union, and it was just, my father was aghast that this is father here. I'm a corrupter, what can I say? And So I'm in Colorado, and I don't even get on a horse. I'm too drunk. I'm at the Mountain Man Bar. I'm in Aspen. I'm in Basalt. I meet Bob Dylan. I'm going to California. Bye, everybody. That's what I did. I'm not sure if it was Bob, but, you know, sang like him, look like him. You don't ask him for his driver's license. You just kind of go along with the Ocelot and the Purple Osley and all the wine, and it's like, where are we going? And okay, Utah, let's go. And we ended up in Laguna Beach. He went his way, I went mine. I ended up at the Sawdust Festival, which was, I think it was their first year. It was the big rebel festival, and they didn't want to charge. And so I met this guy who was he painted a lot of pictures really fast. So he was on something like that, allowed him to do that. And I was drinking my wine, I was mellow, and he was basically saying, I can't sell these things because people don't like to talk to me. And, you know, he was like, will you sell these things for me? I'll do that. Okay, fine. What do you want? So I sat in front of the curtain like Oz back there, painting, with my wine and my, you know, my dresses, my gauze dresses and all the feathers in my hair. And I sold his paintings for him because nobody talked to him. They want to meet him. They just wanted to get the art, you know. So I did that and stayed with him. And all he did was buy me my wine. That was buy me my wine and give me whatever else I needed. And that was the best summer I'd had. It was great. And I wonder whatever happened to him. I have no idea. But I landed at a commune over by the Jack in the Box. I'd never seen one of those heads before. It was like really scary. Didn't have them back where I was from. And they were mellow. And they didn't like me drinking. And they put me out on the hot corner to panhandle. And it's like, I'd rather talk. You don't want to give me money, do you? No. Sure, let's just talk. Buy me some wine? Sure. I come home with like 50 cents, and I go, what? So you're terrible. I said, yeah, you know, I have no self-worth. I can't ask people for money. Are you kidding? You know, I can party with you. But so they put me in the kitchen where it was one of those drought summers where they put seeds and stems in the chicken catchatory. You know, I was like in the kitchen using all the seeds and stems and stalks and everything in there because we're not wasting anything. And one night I'm really thirsty. I have no money. you know, the jackhead is going out the window, and I'm getting really antsy, and this stuff is not doing it for me at all, and makes me thirsty. So I saw their bong wine, and I drank it, and, you know. They got really mad at me, because I guess it was seasoned, you know, really mad at me. And they asked me to leave. So they gave me the only other hyper dog in the whole compound there, because everybody was mellow. But me and the dog were like, let's do something, let's party. What's wrong with you people? You're face down going, let's party. You know, it's like, I couldn't handle it. So they took me outside by, right, I don't know, Barstow, I think, and said bye. And left me and the dog in the middle of the desert. Eventually made it back to Colorado, eventually made it back to my mom and dad's. And my mom and dad are starting to worry about their daughter number two now. My mom and dad didn't really know what was going on. My dad caught me on the local news one night, disrupting a courtroom. You know, isn't that Sharon? I changed my name to Cher. Sharon was a little too corny for me. S-H-A-R-E, Dad. What do you think of that? You know, I rubbed my dad's nose in a lot of stuff because I wanted him to save me, and he couldn't. He had the big shoulders. He could handle his family, his cousins, the community. People came to my father for advice, but he couldn't save me. And it hurt my feelings, I think. I thought he could. I didn't know what was wrong with me. Nobody knew what was wrong with me. Just if she could just maybe finish those two-year colleges and go meet a nice guy. And, you know, they weren't even hoping on me going back to church, which was fine because I had a big fight with a priest in one of the churches in the confessional. It's something you don't like to do. I was an instigator, so that you could come out, you could blow up in front of me, you could be a man of the cloth or somebody who was, you know, my dad even. You could just blow up in front of me and I could look at you and go, what a hypocrite you are. Look at yourself. I was really good at that, and then I would turn and walk away and leave you with that. And, you know, my big cry was, I'm not hurting anyone but me, leave me alone. And new people, I mean, all of you that are under a year, the Al-Anon say that there's 10 people that are digesting their food, their breakfast this morning. 10 people, at least 10 people behind every one of you that can sleep at night because they know you're with us. They don't have to hide their wallet when you come in their house. They don't have to not go to the movies because the bail bondsman will be calling. 10 people's lives are better because you're with us today. So now you can go back to thinking about your favorite subject, which is you, I'm sure. So anyway, it's not about you. It's not about me. You've heard it all weekend. It's about carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And I truly believe from the bottom of my heart, each one of us have one person that will only hear it from us. Mm-hmm. I just truly believe that we have at least one person that will only hear it from us. So you have a life to save. And it's been said this weekend, too, listening to that, you know, the good is the enemy of the best. Be your best. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Shine it up. Shine it up. It's a gift that David and I are talking. So many people don't get it. They don't stay for it. They don't go through the tough times. We've all had them. If you're living life, I just try to tell people that I sponsor and people that ask, don't go looking for drama. Life will give you drama. Life will hand it to you. Then you've got the steps, the tools, God, people, consistency, commitments, things to get you through the tough stuff. And keeps you in the room long enough to get through it so you know. Many of the times, I'm just curious, why am I going through this? I want to know why. I'm going to hang in here whether you like me or not. And I've done that a few times in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the point is I'm still here. I'm still here because I've kept my fanny in the seat no matter what. There's a lot of other stuff that have to go with it, but if nothing else, I've earned my seat here, and I'm staying today. And even on the tough days, I'm staying today. And I don't know, my head still says, you know, I have a loud head. Alcoholism centers in the mind. Thank God for steps 10, 11, and 12. But my head says I never drank in Paris. Right? You know, I mean, it's good. It's good. Maybe you need to look at that passport and find out when it expires. Maybe you need to apply for another American Express card. That's my head. It's still back there, and I just don't feed it a tuna sandwich or a peanut butter sandwich, and I let it starve and send it to the back of the bus. Get in the back of the bus. Thank you for sharing. Now, don't eat. Don't move. You know? I'm sitting up here with God today and all my AA people, so I know you're back there. You're always there. You're always going to jump in there and have a comment or wait for a weak moment or a bad night of sleep and wake me up and say, we've got to talk. You know? But over the years in my drinking, alcoholism asked for pieces of my soul. And my, you know, my dad, I broke his heart. He couldn't even sit. We couldn't sit at the same table and eat at the same time. There was so much tension between me and dad. My mom said, you can stay here. Just stay out of your dad's way because you break his heart. And don't take any drugs in this house. So I drank. I drank in those little taverns. I drank at home. I drank. I was really sick. I didn't know I had gallbladder was bad. Pancreatitis was on the way. I am starting to get physically ill. I meet somebody else who had a solution and at the bar, and of course there was another community. It was organic living in northern Wisconsin. Now you think Iowa's cold. I thought after that, you know, you wake up with icicles in your nose and, you know, and those people were also, I don't know how I ended up with people that they just like to, you know, smoke Mother Earth. And we planted Mother Earth. We did a lot of Mother Earth. But I get thirsty. And I stand out. I can't just sip a little organic dandelion wine. I stand out. I am like the tequila in the air. And, you know, they all like, when I started drinking, they would all go in this other part of the house. And then at 2 in the morning, the snowplow would come through, and I'm celebrating and giving him a drink, and you know, and me and the dog and the cat are so much happier, so much happier. And they, like, wake up and kind of peek around the corner and give me those looks, you know, and what, you know, I hiss at them, and I take their Pete Seeger records and their Hootenanny banjo and kick it, and, you know, lame people, and and then I'd have a hangover, and then they would all, like, just make fun of me. But I stood out. I stood out with the organic people. They didn't want me around. They eventually, we had some crop, and they went and we sold a lot of crop, and they left me a lot of crop, which was nice. But they went off to do primal therapy with their money. I got drunk and screamed at the 50 head of organic sheep. That was a lot more primal for me. And I went in to turn this big, bad dope deal in this college town, Menominee, Wisconsin. And I had set this up, hadn't met the people. I go in. They say, okay, where's the stuff? Ugh, left it back on the farm. I forgot it. You know, I'm a little high. I'm a little loaded. You know, I look at the dog. Why didn't you tell me? You know, he's looking at me. You know. I turned around. I was embarrassed. You know, this is my first big deal, and I'm embarrassed. I forgot it. There's a carnival behind me. That's it. Always wanted to be a gypsy. So my head said, and I went with what my head said. And I went over, and I met Matt Armstrong of Matt Armstrong Shows, and he was the owner, and he ran it, and he was from Sulphur, Louisiana. And he was with all his buddies, and so I went into his little office, which is a trailer, and we cracked open some tequila, and we finished that bottle, and he said, you're hired. Best interview I ever had. And so he gave me my rinky-dink little shooting gallery. I went home. I told the dog to get in. I packed up some clothes, painted a big sun on the hood of the car, named it, because then they last longer if you name them, those $100 cars, and put a lot of my crop in there, because that was bartering, a good bartering tool, and joined Matt Armstrong Shows, and there I was, you know, meeting all my new boyfriends, and, you know, one particularly stood out. He had a pet skunk named Crank, and who loved rum and coke. He would lay on his back after he'd get drunk. he didn't like me much, the skunk. And then the boy and I didn't like each other much, but we hung in there for 2 years. 2 years. Black eye, knife fight relationship. And I grew up where my dad would kiss my mother on her neck doing the dishes and thank her after every meal and lots of love. You know, lots of love in my house. And now it's absolutely normal for me to feel love through violence. It's normal for me to feel through violence. I don't feel unless things are getting crazy now. And I'm with these crazy people in and out of town, and somewhere along the line, something happened, and I maced somebody on the midway because I'm drinking my tequila, and my nice dog is mean now. We're all mean. We're all mean. You're not winning. What do you mean you knocked it down? No, you didn't. Go tell your mommy, you crying little baby. You know? And somebody got mad at me, and I maced them, and they closed us down, and yeah, I know. So a couple of stops later, there was a knock at the door of the cheap motel where we were staying, the skunk, the dog, me, and the guy. And it was 6 a.m. I should have known it was trouble. Somebody had called Franklinton Parish Finest, and they burst their way through, and they found everything we had and took us all off to their little lockup there, where the roaches were as big as your thumb. They would drag your things across the floor in the middle of the night, you know, your shoes, you know, these. And it's like, what's happening? You know, they told me they shot my dog. They didn't. I found her when I got out 31 days later. The carnival didn't come back and save me. My new friends, what's with that? And they were glad to be rid of me. So I call my brother-in-law from this lockout, and they're not giving me any alcohol. No one's giving me anything, and I am going a little bit wacky, and I am cutting myself on a piece of a Coke bottle I found, because they're coming in. And I had to have blood around my bunk and blood on me, and so I bathed once, and everybody watched, and I just went, I'm not doing this. So for 31 days, I didn't bathe, I didn't really eat, and I'm having hallucinations, and I called my brother-in-law after a couple of days. They said, well, you can have one call, because I'm screaming for my Miranda rights. You didn't give me my rights. They finally typed them up, handed them through the bars, and told me to shut up. And after about a week or two, I don't even remember how long it was, they cuffed me and took me and put me in a car and threw me in this building, this little flat building, and this office was, I guess he was the lawyer, I couldn't tell, but then I looked over and there's my dad.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
I hope you have one day that you can remember how you felt, where alcohol took you, that I could remember the feeling in the room, the disappointment that I know he had, the fear that he had for his daughter. I mean, nobody in my family gets arrested. Everybody goes to college. They do the right thing. My dad had to make his way down to southern Louisiana to try to bail his daughter out of this jackpot. And it took me until I was 20 years sober to talk to my dad about that day. You know, if you're doing your amends, please work with your sponsor and don't go running home and start, oh, do you remember when this? Do you remember when that? Well, yeah, you know, I mean, it's like just like ripping off scabs of these people that they didn't sleep at night because they didn't know where I was many times. They didn't know how to help me. They were perplexed with alcoholism. They didn't know I was an alcoholic. They had no idea how to help me. And that's the day I want to remember. When I drink, I start below that day. But I went back to jail. They didn't let me out. They took my dad's money. He went home, and I finally they kicked me out, and I found the French Quarter of New Orleans. And from that point on, all my addresses were Bourbon Street, you know? I mean, believe me, I didn't even try to pretend anymore. I was trying to have a life, even with the carnival, you know? I was a quarter rat, and that's where I lived, and that's where I drank, and I had a lot of summers away, maybe in Florida, because I came to in Florida once out of a blackout with people I didn't know. swimming with dolphins. That was interesting. I thought they were sharks. I'm going, whoa, where am I? And they didn't like me because I guess I was driving the wrong way down the freeway. And so they didn't like me, so they asked me to leave. Nobody really wanted me around much anymore, which was fine with me. And I'd make my way back to New Orleans, and I danced on Bourbon Street. I started tending bar on Bourbon Street. I eventually become unemployable out Lower Decatur Street, which is all cleaned up now, but it was bad. You could smell the bar walking in the front door. Those are my kind of places now. You know, those are my, that they fired me for having a bad attitude. So I became unemployable. And I met a lot of you up down there, a lot of you down there. And the beautiful part about amends is that you get to go back to these places and you get to try to find the people. And in 1980, I got sober August 20th of 85. In 1980, in July, we had the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous in New Orleans. Really, we did.
No.
So I was out looking for all my old friends to see if I could let them know about Alcoholics Anonymous. And what spoke volumes to those people who didn't recognize me at first was how you had cleaned me up. Just how you had cleaned, just how I looked, period. And one of my old roommates didn't recognize me. I had to tell her who I was. Another one found me at the where we were staying at the hotel, and she was drunk out of her mind and passed out on my bed, and with the big book and her cocktail waitress uniform coming open. I had to button her back up. I wish I had a picture of that. She's 29 years sober today in Alcoholics Anonymous, and so is my old roommate, Denny. She's sober, too. Has nothing to do with me other than you cleaned me up and they got curious. You know, it was somewhere in the back of their mind. And I got to make amends to a lot of people in that city because I was armed with all of you in town. I was afraid to go back. But in 1975, my friend Michael was shot and killed on Mardi Gras Day. I was in a blackout, in and out of a brownout, all Mardi Gras Day. I didn't know what I had to do with that. I didn't remember what happened. The police came, they took me downtown, and I'm on the third floor being interrogated by homicide. I am out of it. There is so much in me, I don't even know what's happening. We work Mardi Gras hard, but we also party along with everybody else. And by the time Mardi Gras Day comes, I'm post-verbal, really. And they would come in and try to talk to me, and they would call me all kinds of names and walk out of the room. And I could see the Mardi Gras floats, like, down on the street, like, a couple blocks away. And I just wanted to run and push myself through that plate glass window. I just wanted to fall to the street. But I didn't have the guts. So I left town, and I'm drinking now, like, kind of a crazy person. I'm drinking vodka from the freezer. I'm drinking, it's always with me, the hard stuff. I'm not drinking wine anymore unless I'm out to eat with some people, but I got a flask in my boot. And I end up coming to California again with two guys that were writing a book and got $16,000 from the publishing house. And Andy Black was an alcoholic Scotsman who had written books and written movies. And we drank together, and Sam God was the photographer, and I was the sketch artist. We were going to go do an American Indians Arts and Crafts coffee table book, three drunks, in a Volkswagen van going across country. We hit Maryland, and they put me out of the van, sat me on my suitcase. It's snowing. I'm sitting on my suitcase in Maryland going, I don't know where I am, and I don't know where to go. And they came back. They felt bad, and they said, you're so depressing. I said it was that Winner's Cup vodka we bought at Thrifty. Can't we buy the good stuff? We got money now. And so, come on. And it was quite a trip. But we made it to California. I end up at Barney's Beanery and Rudy's and the Rain Check Room. And Andy Black goes his way. And Sam God marries somebody. And I'm unemployable. I can't get a job at a bar. I can't get a job as a cocktail waitress. Somebody hired me. I was there about 2 hours, and they asked me to leave. I am in my red dashiki, my Panama hat, my backpack, my book, Be Here Now. I had had my gallbladder removed. I had pancreatitis off and on with me. I would be so sick. I couldn't even sip water. So sick. And I was staying in hallways or doorways or wherever. I was 175 bloated, toxic, alcoholic mess, and I didn't look you in the eye. And I got on a Harley because I like Harleys, and we went out to Palm Springs, and they left me because they didn't want to party with me. You're getting the kind of the picture of I wasn't a lot of fun anymore. And don't give me any gin, because I'm going to look for that Ray Price song for the good times, and I'm going to cry in your lap over and over. I didn't even like country music, but when I discovered that For the Good Times, I think Kris Kristofferson wrote it, I literally would play it on the jukebox, and if I was the bartender, I would kick everybody out and just cry, you know, and then somebody would call the owner, and he'd have to... It's Friday night on Bourbon Street, Sharon. Please open up. Please open up. I have the good times, you know. It's like, oh, God. But I am a sick, sorry alcoholic. I am 25 going on 26 years old, and I have nothing left. Nothing. I can't part my hair. I remember when water started to hurt. I don't take care of myself, and... So anyway, I go to Palm Springs to party. They left. I wake up somewhere else. I'm not in a blackout. This is really happening. And these people didn't like me, and they broke my jaw in 3 places, and they broke my nose, and they drug me around for a while and rolled me off the side of a road outside of a small little side of Palm Springs when it was smaller. And first of all, that doesn't happen in that town. So when I was found in... I was in the hospital for 2 weeks, but I'm laying on the gurney that next morning, and if this little broken face could have smiled, it would have, because right there on the paper, I had to sign, you know, who are you? I can't talk, so I'm trying to write. And, you know, it said victim. Victim, yes, yes. My identity. And I was happy about it. And that's where King Alcohol took me, and I went willingly, absolutely willingly. Now, my mother didn't know for 2 nights if I was okay and where I was, because somebody had given her a phone call, neglected to tell her what hospital I was in. She knew I was in California, so my mother and my sister in New York and my mom and I would call until we found out where her daughter was and what kind of shape she was in and that she was going to be okay. So for 2 nights, my mother didn't sleep because of Alcoholics Anonymous. She sleeps at night today. Thank you. I'm overpaid just for that. If I think it's all about me, I just think about that. She wouldn't sleep if I left Alcoholics Anonymous. So my mother's had a lot of good nights of sleep because of you. And it was, they let me out of the hospital. I was wired up. I couldn't eat. I was like trying to drink my cheap wine through the wires on my mouth where the tooth had been kicked out. And that's all I know to do is to drink. I'm living above a liquor store. A guy I'd met at Barney's felt sorry for me. He came down and got me. It's August 20th, 1975. I pick up the phone and call my mother because he asked me to leave because I was too depressing. And I had nowhere to go. Nowhere to go. And the beautiful part about that day, that moment of grace where the window opened up, God pulled me through my hair and the window slammed shut again. And I ended up in AA that night. Not even knowing about you, other than I'd seen the big book in Barney's Beanery one night. She had, I guess, a court card. We didn't know what it was, but this girl had to go get something signed, so we all gave her a drink as she went out of the bar. Go for your Chris, go to A&A, you know. And that morning when my mother said she couldn't help me anymore, go to the Salvation Army, because I called her collect for some money, that was the first miracle that day. The second miracle was there was a phone number sitting in front of the phone, and I dialed it. And it was that girl with the big book in the bar, not relating any of this at that moment. She was dating the guy I was staying with. So she knew I was an alcoholic. And she didn't say that to me. She just said she was drinking that day. She couldn't help me. She said, I can't help you, but call Suzanne. Now, I call a stranger. I don't call a stranger. I don't ask for help. But I did that day. I was tired that day. I was out of answers that day. Now, maybe August 21st, 1975, I would have had a plan. I might have felt a little bit better and had a plan. I was shooting for Phoenix. I was thinking Phoenix. Drive-through liquor stores. North, south, east, west. It was laid out in a grid. You could find your way around that town loaded. I was shooting for Phoenix. But I was too tired on August 20th, 1975, to even put that in play. So I called this girl, Chris. She gave me Suzanne, and I called a total stranger. Now I can't talk. I'm like, first 3 months in AA, I can't talk. I have to learn to listen. My first 3 months in AA, wired shut. People come up to me and go, look, you look like you're tired. How do you know? I think, oh, how do they know I'm new? You know, God. I called this one Suzanne, and she knew exactly where I was. She knew exactly where to tell me to sit, and she had two of her most beautiful babies come pick me up in a bright yellow Volkswagen. I paid attention to her because she said, put your drink down, put your joint down, too. I thought, how does she know I have both? You know? Like, she got my attention, and she knew the liquor store. She could tell where I was because every alcoholic loved that liquor store because they delivered after hours. They were a good liquor store. Everybody liked them. They'd let you lift stuff and sell you out the back. They were a good liquor store. They tore it down a little while ago. I loved to drive by and just see that shell of a human being that was sitting on the steps with her bleached t-shirt and her broken Huarache shoes and jeans, ripped jeans, and filthy hair and crooked mouth and ember of life. That's what was left. That's what was brought to you, was an ember of life. And all it would have taken was one person to go. But the kindling got thrown on that night. So I end up at this AA meeting. I don't know where I am. I'm at the church, and people are nice and dressed nice. How they know I was new? They didn't make me sit in the kitchen until I cleaned up. I said, welcome. Some lady raised my hand for me. I don't know what she's raising up, but she always loved to tell me, I raised your hand at your first meeting. She just died, Beverly Alcoyne. And the guy said he was ready for the spaceship, and I went, yes. Okay, I mean, that's where I was, spaceship people. And then some man came up to me and was talking about payment terms. You know how we are with the big book. You can have the big book, we can payment terms, all that. And he was very excited about me being new, and I'm hallucinating now. His face is dripping, and his nose is getting longer, and I can kind of not understand what he's saying. I was beaten up really bad. I had a concussion. I was like, really, it was easy for me to listen with the ears of the dying because that's where I was. I listened with the ears of the dying, and you guys fed me kindling, just little kindling. So he was so happy I gave him a quarter. That was all I had in my jeans. And I had the other Palm Springs paper. I had that whole thing that happened to me. I had a detective. I had a court case. I was a victim of violent crime in the state of California. Jacobian Meyer sent me a check when I was like a year and a half sober for $700 or something. Whoa, okay. You know, I guess that experience was worth sobriety and $700. And it's funny. But he wrote it down, and he told me when I turned a year sober, I knew you'd make it because you paid me back for that book, one quarter at a time. And I did. I didn't want to owe you guys anything when I left, you know, because I'm a runner. I don't stay, especially for something like this. But I was so tired that I was in. I was in for a while. You guys gave me floors to sleep on. My mother sent me a blender so I could eat, like, you know, a lot of broccoli and cheese, just blend it, eat. I got a sponsor because they had me wash dishes, you know. Seemed like to me they put the ashtrays and the cups together and this whole big thing, you know, it's like, okay, you know, and they let me wash, and the guy drying had a tattooed tear and wouldn't get out of my face. He kept saying, you're going to need a sponsor, you're going to get drunk. You better get a sponsor, you're going to get drunk. And he was a heroin addict and an alcoholic and tall and skinny, and he was from Texas, and I didn't like Texas because I barely made it out of Texas once, It's like he stopped me at the border, and he just looked down at me and looked up at me, and I had everything that was illegal in my socks, and he saw the bulges, and he just looked up at me, and he gave me some grace that day, some mercy. He just said, there's the border, keep on driving, you know. I was like, okay, you know. So Texas made me nervous, and this guy would not get out of my face. So I got a sponsor so he'd shut up. Really, I mean, I can't say anything, really. I mean, maybe it would spit a few profanities out of my wires here, but I couldn't say much. And I asked this woman to be my sponsor because they give you phone numbers and you put them on, you know. She wrote something other than her name. She wrote call anytime. I thought, well, maybe she's nice. No, she was not nice. But she was perfect for me because Janet was a little crazy. And she had to stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous to have a sane life. And she was married to a guy named Don N., and they had like these violent, up against the wall, hands around your throat kind of relationships, you know? In sobriety, and her house was always chaos. I just went over there and always did dishes. That's all I don't want to do dishes, you know? When I don't know what to do and I'm at someone's house, where's your dishes? You know, it just kind of focuses me, keeps my mouth shut. I'm not in anything. But Janet started with me, and she said to me, you know, you raised your hand for 30 days, didn't you? And I'm still wired up. Mm-hmm. Okay, then you admit you're powerless to alcohol. I want you to write down how your life's unmanageable. So I sat at that meeting, and the only thing I could think of, because I was so whacked in the head, was I didn't have matching luggage when I came to AA. It's pretty sad, isn't it? I had no clue what was going on in my life, which was actually beautiful, because I did listen with the ears of the dying. You know, but we worked on that a little bit as we went down the road. We did step two because I didn't run. She walked up to me one day and she said, I see that look in your eye. And I thought, what'd she see in my eye, you know? She was like hot pants and tube tops and big nails and hair and teeth and, you know, laughed like a duck, quack, 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 you know? It's like, I mean, when I heard her one night in the back of the room, I didn't know she was there, and I heard her laugh, I just felt safe. And I hadn't realized I hadn't felt safe in a while. But I had Janet for 5 years. God bless her. She was a motivator because she louder than my head and she intimidated me. And we did our first third step in her house in the daylight on my knees with her kids home and, you know, reading that prayer. And I can hardly read it, but she's all excited. You know, sponsors get excited about those through when you finally make a decision. Let's go, you know, and action and more action. Yeah, here we go. And I'm like, ooh, you know. Why is she happy? Why doesn't she stop hugging me? What's going on? I'm going to have to hit her. Get off me. It'll be all over the meeting. I hit my sponsor. I can't hit her. And I know I was stiff as a board. And then all of a sudden something, I don't know if it was her love, her compassion, or just that I felt safe again. I felt really, really good in her arms. And so my decision to her was, I think I love you. I think I'm gay. That's how short-circuited all those wires up here were. Somebody likes me, I love you, you know. Am I angry? Am I hungry? Marianne used to say to me, you look angry. Did you eat today? No. What's it to you? You know, it's like, you got to eat, Sharon. Oh, okay. You know, I didn't know. I was really re-raised here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We are resurrected. I mean, the big kahuna's got the handle on that, but we get a brand new life here. Every day I wake up with hope. My first year was a lot of fun. I met him, and he had 6 more months than me. And I went home and did my 1 year amends with my dad. And, you know, it was by the car, and the luggage is in the car. I'm coming back to AA. I'm coming back to LA. I'm just like, okay, I'm going back to my home. And I couldn't wait to get there. But I had made my amends to my mom, and I was supposed to make them to my dad, and I didn't do it. And we're standing by the car, and I thought, she will put me on the next plane if I come home and I don't do that. So just her intimidation factor got me to say to my dad, I need to talk to you. So we stood by the car on September Indian summer afternoon where the sky was that beautiful blue and the car was warm from the sun, and we both stood against the car. My luggage is there. I'm coming back, but I'm going to do this. And I had memorized like a 3-line thing to tell my father. Nobody looked at each other. I said what I had to say to Dad. He said, I always wanted you to be happy. We got in the car. We drove to the airport. I came home. She said, did you do it? She said, yes, it's a start. It's a start? It's a start. And I had a lifetime of amends with my dad. He came and walked me down the aisle in California, and we had no money. So we had an AA woman could play the piano, so she played Rachmaninoff. We sobered up an alcoholic. Well, a couple of guys were sober, and then we sobered up Phoebe, the singer, and she's still sober today. We had a rock band so we could dance. We had ham and cheese sandwiches everybody brought because two ex-Catholics married by a Baptist minister with a day at a time putting the vows. And we had a lot of fun. And my dad went to an AA meeting with me, bought the big book, met all of you, thought you were great. And at the end of the wedding, somebody snapped a picture, and me and my dad were eye to eye. And I remember that moment because I was having a Peggy Lee, is that all there is to a wedding moment? Everybody's leaving, stay, we're going to have fun, you know. It's just, but I'm having that moment, and my dad walked up to me, and we started to talk and laugh, and somebody snapped a picture. Long time since Dad and I were eye to eye. Long time. And 5 years of sobriety, my husband and I started getting better jobs. I waited tables for a long time, and then I started working in an office and travel agent. I had to go all over Mexico with drunken travel agents. I hate flying. I'm afraid to fly. It's one of my big, big fears. So I would get on with my big book, and, you know, it's like, okay, who's flying the plane? God's there. Is God there? Look at the pilot's eyes. What's happening, you know? I got these drunken travel agents. I'm showing them this property of the company I work for in Mexico, and it's like I'm hanging onto the seat. Okay, is it fear, not faith? No, it's faith, not fear. Faith, not fear. Faith, not fear. And I would make sure I had all my underwear folded in my drawer because we're going down, you know? And I don't want you to come to my house and go, God, look at that drawer, you know? Look for the sign. Look for the sign. Don't get on the plane if the sign is there, right? But I'm doing my job, and then, you know, before I walked out the door once, I had a 12-step call from Central Office. We used to really get 12-step calls. And I said, I can't. I'm catching a flight. Call me again. So I get on the plane. I'm on the plane. I'm going, that was the sign. That was the sign. I found God. I found God in that first-class seat where nobody was sitting. And I said, all right, we're all right. And you know what? It left me. I had that leave me. I had a couple of things leave me. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me an amazing life. I got divorced. I had a baby. I got divorced. That was a lot of fun. Janet wasn't my sponsor. Woman. Ginny became my sponsor. Ginny was wise. And God, she died on Easter Sunday, actually, about 4 years ago, I think it was. Just dropped dead, just, you know, good way to go. But Ginny started sponsoring me at 5, and one day I was whining about my husband. It was my first husband. You know, it's California. We've had a couple. It's AA. Two's nothing. Nothing. And I was whining about my husband. I had just hit him on the head with a flashlight. As I picked it up, it was rubberized, guys. It was okay. Yeah, but he was like under his headset drawing, not paying any attention to me, like into the doors and flotation tanks and punk rocker. I mean, we had quite a life, I'll tell you what things were going on. I ended up at Al-Anon for a while. And then I walked into a meeting learning how to release him, and he was sitting in there learning how to release me. And We got back together, and I got pregnant, and things, you know, changed for a while, and it was good. But I had hit him on the head with the flashlight, and as I lifted it up, the light bulb went on. Oh, that's anger. I was like, let me call my sponsor, tell I just related something as it happened. I'm not laying in bed 2 days later going, oh, that was that, or I should have said this, or why didn't I, or, you know, all that. Not being present where God is, where love is, where compassion is, where hope is, where how we can help people. Page 77, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to fit ourselves, daily work for us, be of maximum service, not minimum, maximum. Going to be spiritually inconvenienced, yes we are. To God first and the people about us. And it doesn't say I get to judge who gets my help. I get to pick and choose who I let on the freeway ahead of me. I just am supposed to be God's kid helping other God's kids in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous get things done. Freedom. March for it. Peace. One finger peace sign. Two finger peace sign. Love ends. Everything for freedom. Freedom. Had no idea what freedom is on page 77 for me. I'm a blackout drinker too, and so I may never know half these people I can make amends to. Places. Motels. Things I took. Yeah, I hope nobody's around from this hotel. I'm not taking any. I leave tips for maids now. I mean, that carnival is craziness. How do you make amends for a carnival? Well, things come up and things there. You put it on your list. Put it all on your list. But with my dad, and I hit him on the head, and I called and Jenny said, it's time that you make financial amends to your dad. And I thought, We're talking about the flashlight anger. They go to sponsor school. They have this checklist by the phone. Next time we call, we don't care if she broke her foot. We're going to check out. We're going to make financial amends. That's where we are right now. So I was a little taken aback, and so I said, sure, I'll call my dad. And I called my dad, and my mom gave him the phone, and he was ready for me, and he had the total. He had read the big book. He had run a calculator tape. He had looked through my dossier and gotten every piece in there, I swear, because I called her back. I said, it's too high, and he was ready. It's like my mother said, he had it on page 78 where it says most alcoholics owe money, and he had it circled in red, and he told my mother, if Sharon gets to this part of the book and I'm not home, could you give her this figure, please? So I was resentful, of course, and I called her back and she laughed. And see, I've always had a sponsor louder than my head. God bless Jenny. She was my sponsor until I was around 10 years sober, and she smoked pot in Paris working on a play. Came home and drank and gave up her sobriety, got sober again, had 11 years when she died. Wonderful woman. But I had to give her up at that 10 years. But Jenny had me start those amends with my dad, and she said, a good sponsor will want one more piece from you because they know you can have one more piece. And I'm going, oh, I don't know. The money is enough. And she's saying, are you willing to grow through this with your dad? If she said, are you willing to heal this relationship? I would have gone, no. We're not healing. He knows too much about it. I told my dad a lot of what I did. We're not healing. There's guilt there. She said, are you willing to grow through this with your dad? And I said, okay. You know, they wait in your corner. You're painted in. You can't get out. You have to say yes to get out. You know, that's a good sponsor. So I said, okay. She said, well, call him back and let's talk about payment plans. And I talked to her what I was making, and we talked about it. And she said, see if he'll accept your payment terms. And by the way, what I want you to do is when you send that check in an envelope to your father, do not send the cold, hard cash alone. Put a note about your life. Really? My life? He's got the Mensa older sister, Nurse Sally, who lives in Alaska. Knew what she wanted to be when she was 4. My brother has a doctorate. Really? Me? I didn't say that to her. I said, okay. And I called my dad, and he accepted my terms, and I called her back, and she said, then don't be late with that check. You may be the only example of Alcoholics Anonymous that your dad ever sees. So I sent that check off the first time with a little note, and I was kind of rebellious. I put about the prison panel I had gone to because I thought that might excite him a little, you know. Look at that Sharon. She's doing good work in AA. You know, he had no idea what this was all about, but my dad got that postcard for 4 years and about 9 months. He got that card in the mail. He got that money in the mail. He got that, I don't know why I said postcard, because I found a postcard recently my dad had sent me when I was in camp. It's cute. He said, the dog missed me. And by the way, if you don't believe in God, go rescue a dog. You know what it spelled backwards is, right? You know? Because I walk in my house and my dog is, you're home. Like my God saying, oh my God, I love you, come in, come in, come to me, I love you, you're my, it's like the prodigal son, my dog, I open the door, you're home, you're home, you're home. It's like God. If you don't believe in God, go rescue a dog, because they, unconditional love, that's the way my God is with me. I can go anywhere, anytime, any church, any building, any road, any state. I was a convicted felon in the state of Louisiana, and my old roommate, Denny, who was sober 29 years from New Orleans, owned a bar, passed the bar in sobriety, went back to law school, went from the bar to the bar, got sober, got me in a pardon from the governor from the state of Louisiana on first-time offenders, and sent it to me in the mail for fun and for free. For fun and for free. So, a lot of things have healed up. And my dad, I sent him that card and that note, or that card and that Hallmark card, or the letter I wrote in. But my dad got that on time because I'm an example of Alcoholics Anonymous. Simple. Simple. Be your best to those people. Be your best. And then he picked up the phone between Christmas and New Year's. And it was about, like I said, a little under 5 years. And he said, Merry Christmas. He dialed my number. He said, Merry Christmas, Sharon. I don't want your money anymore. Don't send me any more checks, but don't stop sending me your notes. And the Christmas elves just cut the chips off my shoulders, and my dad and I were toe-to-toe and eye-to-eye in a good way till April 19th, 1999, when he was killed on his land in a minute, instant, over. And my dad and I had a lot in common. We were a lot alike. I didn't see it until much later on, but Clancy's my sponsor now, because at 10 years of sobriety, my marriage breaks up. He finds the newcomer in the room. Nobody got custody of the meetings, and I have this baby, and my sponsors smoke pot, and I don't know what's happening. I don't like this man, but he is louder than my head, so I ended up asking him to sponsor me, and he said, "We'll try." So we've been trying for 27 of my 37 years now. It's been working out pretty good. But thank God he was louder than my head, because couple of things. When I went through that messy divorce, he was there one Saturday night that I was going to go see how spiritual and happy they were, because they were having a good Saturday night. You know, date night, all that. And I heard that they're going to be pregnant and married in that order now. And I'm mad at all of you. Nobody told me. I want revenge. I'm betrayed. I'm the victim again. I'm in the front row where I am, but my feet are kicked out, my hair is spiked up, and my arms are folded. Walk over me. Walk over me. I got 10 years. You guys knew this was going on. Nobody told me. Now, I'm not giving up my seat, but I am not happy. And all my babies jump ship. They all jump ship. And my friend Pat Hodges, who a lot of you knew down here, walked over my feet that day with a newcomer at that Saturday night meeting, and she said, "Look at Sharon. She's got 10 years. Do you want what she's got?" Oh, yeah. So I had to go and seek out my sponsor, who stopped me with a hot coffee and said, "You will walk through this with dignity and grace." And about out of my mouth was, "I want revenge." He said, "So you can be an example to others." And I was in that hallway for 1 year, 1 month, and 14 days, but who's counting, right? And in that hallway, I learned to take off the blinders. Other people are in the hallway with me. It's not all about me. That we've gotten word, other people have gotten through the door, that the hallway ends, and that there's a view there, and it's a good life through that other door, and we're getting closer because the other guys made it. And I've learned how to show up at meetings and pick up the phone and answer the phone and do what I'm supposed to do anyway, even if I'm in pain. And I was in pain, and thank God for Clancy, because he made me go to their baby's first birthday party with my son. And my son would get in the car after being with them all weekend and go, "Oh, look what Jill gave me," or, "Jill took me to the movies, and Jill bought me this, and Jill said this." And my sponsor said, "Bite your tongue. Do not say anything about her." And I have a scar. So I went to that first birthday party, and he said, "You'll take a present." So I went to Toys R Us sale bin, and I picked up a sale present. You know, this is little boy, right? But I'm mad at her. So I'm, like, crinkling up the paper in the car to wrap it with tape, like my son did it, right? But I'm having fun doing this. So here's your present, you know. But so we go to this birthday party, and the beautiful part about this is Jill and I are friends today. And he left her eventually, because sometimes how they come is how they go. He didn't make peace with whatever it was within him. And she told me she knows she could walk through it because she had watched me. So I don't get to judge who gets my example. I don't get to say, "Yes, you do, no, you don't." And Jill and I are good friends, and we watched that video of her baby's first birthday party. And I'm the shadow in the back, you know, picking up everything to wash. I'm in the kitchen. I'm like this furtive shadow. It was hilarious. We laughed so hard. We're doing Mother's Day this year. Her son's in the Navy. My son will be home, so we're going to do Mother's Day together. We do Mother's Day a lot, me and the second ex-wife. He's on third right now. And the second ex-wife and I are sober in the same group, and we love each other, and we care about each other, and I never thought that was going to happen. And I want to just spend a few minutes talking about, after that marriage was over and I got through the hallway and I started sponsoring people again, and I had a few stick with me, the crazies stuck with me, and they're still doing okay today, which is great. And I have a row of people here I love that I sponsor and know lot about their life, and we support each other. And you get married, you get divorced, people die, and we walk through it together. I can't even look at him because I love him so much, you know. And Dan was my was Casey's brother. Johnny was my husband's sponsor. I married a man. Met and married after I got through that hallway. We started dating, and we lived separate for 18 years. Who's in a hurry? Nobody. We were doing AA. It was a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. We had a lot of fun. We did a lot of practice these principles panels together as a couple, and we got to have a lot of magical moments all throughout the world together. All throughout the world. He was a hell of a golfer. Hell of a golfer. Anybody that golfed with him came back a better golfer. And we got married when we were together 18 years. So we had 5 years of marriage, and then he got sick with malignant melanoma. And it'll be 2 years this June, and I'm just going through another right now. It's just kind of happening, and it just does that, you know. I have an amazing God. And it's been talked about this weekend. Wrapped around the pain is the joy of living. Wrapped around every piece of my broken heart, which I think broken hearts heal bigger. I really do. Is the joy of living. And the peace that can come with that and the freedom is unbelievable. And I function. I have not stopped functioning. I've not stopped doing my commitments or going to work where they give you 3 days bereavement. Yes, then come back and be, you know, get over it. got a little resentment going there. I'm still working on it. Just a little. But my girls that work for me had my back. I got to remember that, you know. And Alcoholics Anonymous walked with me every step of the way, every step of the way. And we were in the room together when he transitioned, and there was so much peace and love left. I can't even explain that day. It was like a magical mystery tour. But it took out a lot of my fear. It took it. And I catch glimpses of my husband in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to think freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Oh, boy. I have the absolute privilege of being with you, sitting in the middle, because I forget. I go out in the world, I come back, I sit in my meeting, they read chapter five, I go, oh, yeah, that's right, there's hope. You know, I mean, I need to be with you. I need to be a channel. I need to clean this stuff out that wakes me up in the middle of the night, or that the critical self that's yank, 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 yank that I had since I was a little girl that kept me away from my family. I love my family. We love each other. There's been amends made to that carnival. I sponsor a nun. I know that's a long story, but my son got kicked out of one school. We took him to the nuns, and they shaped him up, and they have a carnival every year. That was their moneymaker, and so guess who worked it for 8 years? Whatever you need, whatever you need. And when he graduated from eighth grade, I knew that amends was done. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. And my son is 28 years old, and he's an amazing child, living his dream without having to do what I had to do. And he looked at me one day. He was about 14. He said, come on, you wasted a lot of time drinking, didn't you? And it was like, oh. He says to me now, he says things like, well, maybe we should sleep on that. Or, don't you think that's a little overreaction? And I just, I want to ask him to be my sponsor. You know, it's just like. But I am full of love because you have cleaned me out. You have given me the tools that are laid at my feet. The central fact of our lives today, right there on page 25, the central fact is that our God has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. And that's the miracle, is that we have to die to get it. Your old self has to die to get it. And it dies screaming. It dies fighting. It dies. But being in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I remember what Blake is, because I always wanted to just have a life that I could be a part of and make a difference. And give my best. And I read Blake one day, and Blake is so confusing, he's so mystical, but he wrote this. He was sitting by the Ganges, and he was just doing some writing, and he was in India, and they were having their people that they light on fire, their funeral pyres. They have certain times that they light these pyres, they put everything everybody loves inside, like my husband, his golf club, you know what I mean? I just have this vision. And he was sitting there, and all of a sudden, all these boats on fire start going down the Ganges at night. And he's fascinated by this. Where did these come from? What are these? And he started looking at them, and he found out what they were. He thought, wow, each one of those lit boats is a life. And he wrote, which I love, when they throw me on the pyre of life, may I be all used. That's what I'm shooting for. Thanks for having me. Wow. Happy Easter.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.